Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 6, The Downfall of Subhara Muni, Text Number 39. Jamunantara Jale Magnas Tapyamana Param Tapa Nyavritim Mina Rajasya Drishva Maituna Dharmina Jamunantara Jale Magnas Tapyamana Param Tapa Nirvitimina Rajasya Drishva Maituna Dharmina. Rajasya Vishvamaituna Dharmina Jamunantara Jale Magnas Tapyamana Param Tapa Nirvitimina Rajasya Vishva Maituna Dharmina. Ladies. Jamuna Antakjale. In the deep water of the river Jamuna, Magna, merged completely. Tapyamana, executing austerities. Param, uncommon. Tapa, austerity. Nirvitim, pleasure. Mina Rajasya, of a big fish. Drishva, seeing. Maituna Dharmina, engage in sexual affairs. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Savari Rishi was engaged in austerity deep in the water of the river Jamuna when he saw a pair of fish engaged in sexual affairs. Thus he perceived the pleasure of sex life, and induced by this desire, he went to King Mandata and begged for one of the king's daughters. In response to this request, the king said, "O Brahmana, any of my daughters may accept any husband according to her personal selection." Purport. This is the beginning of the story of Subhari Rishi. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Mandata was the king of Mathura, and Subhari Rishi was engaged in austerity while submerged deep within the river Jamuna. When the Rishi felt sexual desire, he emerged from the water and went to King Mandata, asked that one of the king's daughters become his wife. Translation. Yes, that's he got the purport. Subhari Muni thought, "I am now feeble because of old age. My hair has become gray. My skin is slack, and my head always trembles. Besides, I am a yogi. Therefore, women do not like me. Since the king has thus rejected me, I shall reform my body in such a way as to be desirable even to celestial women, what to speak of the daughters of worldly kings. Thereafter, when Suvarimuni became quite a young and beautiful person, the messenger of the palace took him inside the residential quarters of the princesses, which were extremely opulent. All 50 princesses then accepted him as their husband, although he was only one man. Thereafter, the princesses, being attracted by Suvarimuni, gave up their sisterly relationship and quarreled amongst themselves, each one of them contending, "This man is just suitable for me and not for you." In this way, there ensued a great disagreement. Because Suvarimuni was expert in chanting mantras perfectly, his severe austerity resulted in an opulent home with garments, ornaments, properly dressed and decorated maidservants and manservants, and varieties of parks with clear water, lakes, and gardens. In the gardens, fragrant with varieties of flowers, birds chirped and bees hummed, surrounded by professional singers. Suvarimuni's home was amply provided with valuable beds, seats, ornaments, and arrangements for bathing, and there were varieties of sandalwood creams, flower garlands, and palatable dishes. Thus, surrounded by opulent paraphernalia, the Muni engaged in family affairs with his numerous wives. Purport. Suvarimuni was a great yogi. Yogic perfection makes available 8 material opulences: anima, lagima, mahima, prapti, prakamya, ishisva, and kama vashiyita. Suvarimuni exhibited super excellence in material enjoyment by dint of his yogic perfection. The word Varicha means expert in chanting mantras. As material opulence can be achieved by ordinary material means, it can also be achieved by subtle means through mantras. By chanting mantras, Suvarimuni arranged for material opulence, but this was not perfection in life. As will be seen, Suvarimuni became very dissatisfied with material opulence and thus left everything and re-entered the forest in the Vanaprastha order and achieved final success. Those who are not atma-tattva-vit, who do not know the spiritual value of life, can be satisfied with external material opulences. But those who are atma-tattva-vit are not inspired by material opulence. This is the instruction we can derive from the life and activities of Suvarimuni. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaye Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskadhyade Sadharana. In this Tupatila verse, there are 2 important aspects. One is that by chanting mantras, one can get whatever one wants if one is expert. And second is that even if one gets whatever one wants in the material world, one will still not be satisfied. This is the idea of the 9th canto, to show us all the different possibilities that we can achieve by yogic mystic power, by becoming a king or an emperor, by getting fabulous riches, and still one will be in the same place. One will be dissatisfied. Now, as far as chanting mantras go, generally speaking, everyone gets whatever they have by chanting. First of all, if you want a glass of water and you don't want to get it yourself, you have to chant the mantra. Do you know what the mantra is? Could you please get me a glass of water? And if the mantra is effective, someone will give you a glass of water, which proves the efficacy, the potency of your mantra. You direct it to the right person or the right demigod, and it's effective if the person actually brings you a glass of water. Similarly, if one wants to get $1 million, he has to go to the, somehow or another, he has to hear from the right source, and then he has to learn the right mantras, and then if he chants the mantras that he learned from the right source in the right way, somehow or another he might be able to get the money he's looking for. If he wants to buy stock, he has to call up the stockbroker with the mantra, please buy me this stock. And if he pronounces it properly, the mantra, and the stockbroker can understand what he's saying, then he buys the stock for him. So this is the way the material world works. We have to hear how others are chanting mantras. As I used to say, even a bird, he has to learn from his parents how to chant the mantra, beep, beep. You know what that means? No, it's where's the worm? So even a bird has to learn how to chant a mantra. And if the other bird hears, he goes, beep, beep, beep. Means it's over there. But as it explains here, that even when we learn how to chant these mantras by hearing them from the right source with the right attitude, then even we get all the perfectional powers, after all, who can imagine, what would you rather have, $1 million or the powers of Sobari Muni? Because if you had the powers of Sobari Muni, that he had anima, mahima, prakamya, then you could get everything, anything you wanted in this material world. At any time, I mean, look at Sobari Muni. He was an old man sitting in the Jamuna, and suddenly he became a young man. Now, how much would anyone pay for that? They may imitate that by surgery or cosmetics, whatever. But he actually did it by his mystic power. Now, he got it not by going to a university or putting on some, what is it called, Botox? Is that what it's called? Botox. That's not how he got to become a young man. He did it by sitting in the Jamuna for thousands of years. So anyone prepared to do that? First of all, you have to learn how to not to breathe. Or breathe like a fish. That takes a little while to learn. You have to go to fish school. And then if you can sit there, you have to learn how to survive without eating. And I imagine drinking wasn't a problem. Eating was a problem, though. And he did it after thousands of years, and he got that power. But as all, just like the vulture goes high into the sky, but what is he looking for? He's looking for a dead body. So that's basically speaking what everyone's looking for. Now we may think or we may proclaim that I'm not looking for a dead body. I'm looking for a beautiful man or a beautiful woman or this or that. But actually everyone is a dead body with a soul inside. The only thing that makes the body appear alive is that we ourselves, the souls, are in the body. But no one's attracted by the soul because we can't see the soul. We can't even see ourselves, what to speak of anyone else. But there are certain forms in the material world that one is attracted to, but they all fit into the category of a dead body. Of course, if we speak like that, we can speak like that in the class, but outside the class, usually you can't speak to most people like that. My dear girlfriend, I love you, although you're a dead body. But you're a very good-looking dead body. But that's basically what everyone is trying to do, is make their dead body as attractive as possible. But when the soul leaves the body, then you say, what happened? You were so attractive 2 seconds ago, but now you look a little pale. But that's ultimately what people are working so hard for. Even by going to the factory or doing their business deals or even doing austerities. And austerities up to the point where you get mystic power, or even you go to Brahmaloka. Maybe in Brahmaloka, people are intelligent enough, they want to get liberation. But ultimately, arutrikshena paramparam tada patatnina nadrita yushmat angrayaha. Unless the people in Brahmaloka are pure devotees, their liberation is only temporary. And then they come back to the material world. And basically speaking, they're looking for some dead body. Everyone's looking for a dead body. In our estimation, an attractive dead body. After all, the dog is also a soul in a dead body called the dog body. But so far, most people in Kali Yuga are not attracted to the dog's body. Oh, that may be coming in the future. Although it's also a soul within a dead body, but we're discriminating which dead body we want to enjoy, which we're attracted to. And that's the gift of Maya. And that's the gift of material intelligence. Now, if we were raised, like some people are raised with the monkeys, there's documented evidence, monkeys or sometimes bears or wolves, actually. There's someone was left abandoned in the forest with wolves, and he became one of the wolf family. So I'm sure he fell in love with the she-wolf, although she probably wasn't so much attracted to him. Or maybe she was, I don't know. You know, some people like things that are a little strange. In any case, that's Maya making us believe that this is actually what we're looking for. But ultimately, Isabhara Muni had the good fortune that he already had a spiritual experience, not the topmost spiritual experience, because he got into this situation of developing sexual desire because of his offenses against a great devotee. Generally speaking, people are anxious to have material desire. If you become an old person and you lose in the material, if a materialist becomes old and loses the inclination towards sex life, they become depressed, and therefore they start taking intoxication to cover over their depression. And Prabhupada even said that sometimes old people, they'll spend a good amount of money trying to graft monkey genitals onto themselves so they can have revived sex life. But people are so anxious to get this material desire fulfilled. But Sabari Muni got it not by austerity. He didn't have to pay anything. He got it by offending the Vaishnavas. Because Garuda, as we'll find out, was fishing in the Jamuna. Now, of course, Garuda is a great devotee, but he's not a vegetarian. But whatever fish he gets, he offers to Matsya. Or, no, not to Matsya. I don't know who he offers it to. Anyhow, he's the great. I don't know if Krishna accepts the offerings of Garuda, but anyhow, he offers it to someone. Because he's a bird, Garuda. I guess he's kind of half man, half bird. But he's a bird. And his diet is made out of fish. Sometimes he eats elephants. Turtles also. He likes turtles. So don't get a deity of Garuda, because it'll be very hard to to offer anything to him. In any case, he was fishing in the Jamuna, and Sabara Muni, the fish, Sabara Muni said to Garuda, Because the fish, all the fish in the Jamuna, they're a special fish to be in the Jamuna. You have to be a little special. Especially if you're in the Jamuna your whole life. Imagine if you were born in the Jamuna, it would be, and you could live there the whole life. Not as a fish, but, you know. So the fish there, they complain to Sabari Muni that Garuda is coming and capturing ourselves, and we live in fear all the time, but this is supposed to be the spiritual world. So Sabari Muni told Garuda, if you come to the Jamuna, then I'm going to curse you. But Garuda said, all right, I'm not going to come anymore. But then he stole the leader fish to eat it. So Sabari Muni became angry and said, from henceforward, if Garuda ever comes to the Jamuna, by my mystic power, he'll be killed. Because Garuda can't be killed, he has a spiritual body. But because of Sabari Muni's uttering that curse, he became offensive to a Vaishnava, and because of the offense, material desire eventually appeared within his heart. So material desire is not a bonus that the material nature gives us as a reward. It's actually a result of offenses. And the worst offense is against the Vaishnavas, against Krishna's devotees, and therefore we find that those who have offended devotees, whether it be Sabari Muni or Ramachandra Puri or Ramachandra Khan, and the list goes on, those offended Vaishnavas, they've gotten very distinct reactions, either by developing material desires or by getting gravely ill. So it's not a good idea to offend Vaishnavas. As a matter of fact, practically a whole series of books called Chaitanya Bhagavat is just full of stories and warnings against offending Vaishnavas. In any case, Sabari Muni got, by his mystic power, he got the opportunity to fulfill his desire to a way that's extraordinary. But at the end, he realized it doesn't matter how much we try to fulfill material desires, it always winds up the same thing. Tuchavat, insignificant. Therefore, it is said, Tyaktva Tornam Ashesha Mandala Pati Srinim Sada Tuchavat Bhutva Dina Guneshako Karunaya Gopina Kanta Shito Gopi Baba Rasamrita Dilahari Kolona Sangitito Pande Rupa Sanatano Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopalago. That the six Goswamis, Chakva Tornam Ashesha Mandalapati, they were greatly prominent, they were prominent persons in that society. Rupa Goswami had a boat full of gold coins, thousands of gold coins. Could you imagine if you had a boat full of gold coins? Well, if you did, people would come and steal them from you. But in any case, you'd have to spend a fortune trying to protect them. But he had people a little bit more honest at that time. So he had a boat full of gold coins. And they were both ministers in the government of Nawab Hussein Sain Shah. They were controlling vast amounts of money and people and land. But they gave it all up. Raghunath Das Goswami was also the son of Zamadar, great landholders and tax collectors, Govardhan Majumdar and Hiranya Majumdar. But he gave it all up and joined Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what did they get? They became mendicants, begging from door to door. Jiva Goswami, when he was offended a Vaishnav, Balavacharya, then Rupa Goswami told him to leave Vrindavan, and Jiva Goswami lived on the outskirts of Vrindavan in a hole which was dug by a crocodile. not exactly the most comfortable home you could find, unless you were a crocodile. And he had no food. He only begged a little bit of powdered grain, mixed it with water, and ate it raw for months. In any case, they lived very austerely, but they were enriched with the feelings of separation of the gopis from Vrindavan, and therefore they were feeling transcendental pleasure at every moment. So that's ultimately the goal, is that we want to feel pleasure. But the only real pleasure that can be experienced at every moment is transcendental pleasure. So if we're going to go through so much austerity to get happiness, we might as well go through some austerity to get transcendental happiness, because that will last forever. And even if we go through all the austerity and we get everything we want in the material world, ultimately, unless we have no experience of spiritual life, because Prabhupada mentions here that if you have no experience in material life, then you'll live happily in the material world according to your experience of material happiness, because you don't know of anything better. Therefore, you'll more or less be content with that amount of happiness. Well, you won't be content completely, but at least you'll think, well, this is all I can get, so I might as well try to be content with it. But if one gets a higher taste, then one can never be content with simply a very limited amount of happiness that's found in material existence. No matter how much opportunity one gets for eating or sleeping, mating, defending, one will still feel dissatisfied because one will always hanker for that higher taste that one has previously experienced. So, the point is that if we're fortunate enough to get a higher taste, then we can work for the actual goal of life. And if not, then we'll be satisfied by working for some kind of higher expectation. We may work for getting mystic power or going to Satyaloka or whatever we may work for. We might eventually get it, but we might not be, ultimately it will not completely satisfy us. And therefore, the only way out of the material existence is to try to look for the highest taste, which was, according to Maharaj Rishabhdev, Nanyam Dehai Deho Bhajam Riloke Kastan Kaman Arhate Vidbhujanye Po Divyam Putrika Yene Sattvam Shriya Tasmai Brahma Sokyam Tam. That my dear boys, don't live like a hog and dog, simply looking for material pleasure and stool. Instead, you should perform divine austerity, because by such austerity you can gain happiness, which is spiritual and which goes on forever. So that doesn't mean that one should live a completely austere life as a devotee, but while one is trying to satisfy one's senses to some extent, because everyone who's conditioned to one extent or another is going to try to satisfy their senses. It's inevitable. It's artificial not to at least maintain some level of degree of eating, sleeping, or perhaps mating or defending. It's not practical to just deny these urges. But while we're doing them, we should seek after the higher taste too. Or as it says, Parma Karuna Paho Dvijana Nityai Gora Chandra Sabha Avatara Sarashiro Mani Kevala Anandakanda. That these two laws, Gor Nityai, they're the most merciful. And their process is simply Anandakanda. Is simply joyful. Bhaja bhajavai chaitanya nitai sudrida vishvasikori. So we should serve them with great faith and determination. Vishaya charya serasaima jiya muke bolo hari hari. So it's not that one has to give up sense gratification, but one should regulate it. One should follow the scriptures and try to follow the engage the senses in sense gratification as much as necessary. What that much as necessary may be different for different people. But while one is engaged in a process of having to satisfy the senses and go through the process of some kind of economic development to do so, then one should not forget about liberation. That the point is to get that higher taste in Krishna consciousness so that one can gradually give up sense gratification, and eventually merge oneself in the ecstasy of love for Krishna. So that may take some time, may even take a long time, but But at least that's what we should go towards while we're regulating our sense gratification. Look forward to the time when we're so much absorbed in ecstasy and love for Krishna and everyone that we don't even know there's such a thing as sense gratification. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yes?
I would just like to ask about offenses to the Vaishnavas. What are some most important preliminary measures so that the chances to commit Vaishnav aparat is the smallest possible?
Well, the lowest possible is live in a hole somewhere. Hopefully where there's some grass that you can eat. That's the low. The other is we can try to serve the Vaishnavas. That's the only way out, really. To think within our mind, what can I do to serve you? Because as soon if we don't think like that, we'll think either you're useless or I feel obligated to offend you. What am I going to get from you? So we have to, unless we think that what can I do to serve you, then we'll have some other attitude which will be more or less offensive to different degrees. So that's probably the biggest austerity in Krishna consciousness, is to actually develop a service attitude. Towards Krishna is pretty easy because he seems to accept everything. He's always smiling. But the devotees sometimes get a little agitated. So. So therefore, that's probably the biggest challenge. Satam prasangam amavirya samvido. Therefore, in the association of devotees, then if we can learn how to serve them properly, then Krishna consciousness becomes like nectar. And the biggest obstacle is our false ego, which is probably the strongest part of our existence. You know, we get one body after another, we get one, even our mind changes, but our false ego just grows in the material world. So we've cultivated a pretty strong one. Even a little tiny bug has a real big false ego. Anything else? Kala Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.